The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So what was that like, and what did some of you learn from listening to those or listening to yourself being part of that discussion? Sonia.
I just thought it was very interesting that we all had such varied responses to our relationship with sloth and torpor. Just all over the map. Way more variation than the relationship with energy.
Mm. Great, thank you.
I'd like some actually clarification on there is a sloth and torpor that can happen when one is going through aversion, avoiding things. I'm tired. No, I don't want to do that. I'll sleep, whatever. And the sloth and torpor that happens when you just are tired. Physically, vitality is
right.
Not there. Are they the same thing?
No.
Okay. So there is a difference between the sloth and torpor of a vitality versus a hindrance of aversion that's causing you to react in such a way as to mm-hmm. be.
I don't think we want to. I don't think it's so useful to make an absolute separation between these, but there is an important distinction to be made between natural tiredness, if the energy is not there, because you're tired, you ended the long day or something, you haven't slept for 3 days, versus tiredness that comes very clearly as a form of resistance or a psychological kind of strategy of how to deal with things. Sometimes when people get challenged, some people's response to that is to get tired or shut down. So there's that form of sloth and torpor. There's another kind of sloth and torpor that comes not so much from naturally being tired, but from being drained, from maybe kind of excessive use of energy or excessive use of kind of worry or anxiety. People who worry a lot tend to get tired pretty easily. And so it looks a little bit like, you know, natural tiredness end of the day. I don't understand all the different aspects of tiredness and how it all comes on, but I know there's this wonderful phenomenon of power naps. It seems that there's something chemically almost, something that shifts inside. But what got those chemicals going there in the first place? You know that, or what is it that it can shift so quickly in 10-minute nap or something. So there's a whole range of things, and the reason not to separate it out too hard and fast is that for meditators, you have to learn how to practice wisely with all of the above, including when just tiredness. I mean, sometimes when we're really tired, the best thing to do is to go get sleep. But sometimes also you're going to practice with natural tiredness and try to do your best to continue practicing with it. But then sometimes the strategy of how to be with that might be different than how to be with the tiredness that comes from resistance.
Just something that came to me with this whole series is that there's the five hindrances which we're discussing, and it's been very, very useful. And in Christianity, it's called the seven deadly sins, and there are five of them. I think they're part of the seven deadly sins, the hindrances.
I don't know if all of them are, but...
No, not all.
The seventh deadly sin is sloth.
Yeah, no, I know. I think I actually did look at them a while back, and the five are in the seven. But I think it's nice that this is just, you know, we work with these things versus that they're deadly sins, which you would never want to look at.
Right. There's no need for confession.
Pride.
Gluttony, I think, is one of them, yeah.
Lust and desire.
It's kind of like greed.
Gluttony, is that? Maybe gluttony kind of goes on. Similar to desire. Anyway.
I have a question out of the sharing that came in our group and related to what you just said. It seemed, well, we were talking a lot about shoulds and the aftermath of shoulds being resistance and things like that. But there's another thing that happens on the cushion, or I've experienced on the cushion, which is if I get too concentrated without enough mindfulness, It's like my head is full of cotton and I can't arouse myself. So is that, is there resistance or other things in that, or is that, is there just a pure concentration versus mindfulness balance problem?
It's usually not, worded as concentration versus mindfulness, but concentration versus energy. And so usually the balance is to bring them both into, have them in balance. And it, and so if there's strong concentration, the concentration is almost synonymous with calm, almost. And so there tends to be this, this kind of lowering of energy level. And so there has to be a matching of appropriate kind of energy to meet that concentration. So you kind of there, so you can be mindful or present. So that's one of the reasons for sloth and torpor meditation or dullness in meditation is the person gets too calm. And there's a lot of people are looking for calm, are even trying to soothe themselves by meditating. They even consciously or unconsciously, they think meditation is about soothing themselves or soothing themselves with the breath. They're lingering with the out-breath, kind of to get soothed and calmed. And they don't realize that if that's the kind of main thing they're trying to do in meditation, that's going to lead to a dullness, lead to tiredness or just kind of... And there's no, it doesn't represent psychological resistance. It just means that somehow we've let kind of the... Like if you sit all day, if you sit for, you know, 4 hours, you sit, and conventionally sit, you know, in a dentist's office or something, you know, it tends to be kind of tired by the end of it. But if you got up and walked up and down the hallways and got some energy going, you come into balance again. So so that's one of the causes of sloth and torpor is too much concentration. But you don't necessarily want to get less concentrated. The concentration is good. You want to match it with some certain kind of vitality or engagement or effort.
Where does that come from? I mean, how do we generate that?
So how do you generate mental effort when you're meditating? There's a variety of ways. That's what I was going to talk more about that this afternoon, but since you asked. There's one thing I find is it's always good to try to do it physically. So in a retreat, for example, or even at home, to do walking meditation. It's a way of getting energy. To walk and then come and sit. And if you're really tired, don't just go sit. Go do a walking meditation for a while. And then when you're... That tends to make some good energy flowing, and then you can go sit. Another is to do physical things like wash your hand, your face, your neck, your hands, and your feet with cold water. You know, that's in the Zen monasteries in Japan, one of them, they had actually a basin in front of the meditation hall for that purpose. And so there's a variety of physical things you can do in meditation. One of the great ones is sit up straight. And that can help. Open your eyes can help. If you're able, which most people aren't, just sitting in full lotus is a great way. I can't really do it so much anymore, but when I could still do it, I would...
So you're recommending pain?
No. No, I wasn't recommending pain. But not, the pain is energizing, but don't use pain for that purpose. But there's yogic kind of things that happen. And when you sit in full lotus, that I found that it would help me a lot. I was really sleepy. It's one of the few times I would, in the last decades, where I would sit in full lotus was in order to combat sleepiness. So that, you know, something different happens here. And then inside meditation, you know, in terms of that's physical. You do a variety of physical things. Adjusting your breathing can help sometimes. Sometimes breathing just a little bit more deeply than usual. Breathing deeper into the belly or emphasizing the in-breath. Sometimes breathing into the upper chest as you breathe in. It kind of brings the energy, kind of uplifts the energy a little bit. Can sometimes. Then there's a whole mental way of energizing yourself. And so, especially if the meditation is getting kind of very concentrated, you don't want to do so much physical stuff. Maybe that's even that'd be agitating energy. But you want to engage a certain kind of greater mental effort that keeps you going, keeps you energized. And one way to do it is to use mental noting. Sometimes just the activity of mental noting brings more energy. And or if you are doing mental noting, you could notes a little bit more, faster, or fuller, or more energetically, like more notes per minute. Some people find that kind of brings more energy until you get going. And sometimes there's a little bit more nebulous how to describe it, how you do this, but there's a way of kind of brightening up the mind, bringing a certain kind of light or brightness to the mind. Some of that is done by a little bit related to noting, but a clear emphasis on recognizing what's happening. You look more carefully. What's happening here? What's happening here? Recognizing it. And that activity of recognition, active recognition, more engaged recognition, can bring more energy sometimes. So those are some things. Okay. I'd love to hear more, but I want to move on a little bit before we take our break for lunch. And that is, I want to ask you a question, and then hear some of the range of responses that occurs to you. What are some of the ways of thinking that encourage sloth and torpor, dullness, tiredness, lethargy, laziness? What are some of the ways of thinking?
For me, not having a direction or being indecisive.
So not having a direction, being indecisive, great.
An inability to do something or being, can't do something.
So the inability.
Yeah, there isn't an option clear or something's been shut down that you can't go that way, then that's when I can tend to get.
Okay, that's reasonable, but the question was, what ways of thinking cause sloth and torpor? So to translate that, would be when you're thinking, I can't do it.
Right. Or believing what somebody's told me. That
believing, yes. Yes.
I was just going to say something very similar. A negative attitude will bring me down.
Can you give an example of negative attitude?
I'll never be able to do this.
The delusion of permanence.
Yes. The never part is never. I will never be able to do this or get this accomplished or be this way or that way.
So that'll put you to sleep.
Yes. It's much easier to fall asleep than to deal with the negative thoughts.
The seduction of sleepiness. It's better. It's more pleasant. So I saw, then we pass that back there and then we'll take Cheryl.
Variation on it is that thinking about something I can't do anything about. Literally, I have no power over.
So feeling helpless or powerless and keep thinking about it is time. Great.
Something that really makes me feel sloth and torpor is thinking, is this really worth doing?
Is this worth doing? Yes. So having doubt about whether it's worth doing.
Without even trying to find out what it is.
So the doubt.
It's not immediately attracting me, so is it even worth doing?
So having doubt about the worthiness.
There's the one about I just don't seem to get any satisfaction and I feel deprived, so I'm just going to quit trying to deal with things and gratify myself for a while.
You're going to shut down. Okay, so Gail?
The idea that I have to do something. Mm-hmm. Just it's something that I should or but even I've got to do it. That's what creates it for me.
Thinking of a project, like seeing the whole project at one time as if I have to do it all at once instead of just one step at a time, forgetting that.
What you said about aversion from resentment, that's a huge one for me. That this thing is taking up more time, so I'll just won't do it.
And so sloth and torpor is a strategy for not doing it, just shut down?
Yeah, it's very passive aggressive.
Great. Straight back.
I don't know if it's sloth and torpor, but I used to, when I was still like working, I used to, I had to travel a lot to present a concept that I had developed. And usually I just didn't want to exhibit myself. I didn't want people to see me, hear me. I thought I was stupid anyways. That thing what I developed was just crap. So I needed a lot of empowerment from others to do it. And that was, I found inappropriate for what I was supposed to do. So that was one reason why I quit, because I realized I just can't do that. So, and for me, it's like, I back off or literally run away or get extremely curled up a little bit when I have to, it's kind of funny, I'm talking here publicly, when I have to do things that, I like this place, when I have to do something that reflects on me. I mean, that's...
Great, yeah. So there's a whole, that's a great, a profound thing you said, that for many people, it reflects on oneself. So when self-worth, self-image, all this, and that can have a big impact on our energy level and whether we get tired or drained.
But it's, for me, it's a learned thing. It's just a habit. It's something I learned when I was a child, and I realize it's not necessary anymore because I'm way better than what people had told me in the past. But to overcome that, that is a challenge.
Great. Thank you.
For me, emotional confrontations or conflict with other people make me immediately very tired. I mean, somebody just has to say to me, we really need to do something about Ingrid's room. And my heart is just, yeah. Oh. It's I think, fear of conflict.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I find fascinating is that most of the individual's responses to sloth and torpor are generated by hindrance. And it's a response of a hindrance that triggers a response in the body to shut down. I think that's fascinating.
So I mean, explain again.
Oh, as opposed to, well, you're tired, and that's why there's sloth and torpor.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You know, there's
yeah. So it means
it's a mental state, yeah, or it's generated from a mental state.
Yeah. So I think it's helpful to think of. Sometimes it's helpful to think of all the five hindrances as being dysfunctional strategies for responding to challenge. That's not the whole story by any means, but sometimes that's it's interesting thing for you to look at. Okay. So your instruction during lunch is to give further consideration to what are the conditions that bring on sloth and torpor, dullness, lethargy, laziness, so forth. What are the conditions? So one of them is the mental conditions, the beliefs and the thoughts. And so what are some of the conditions that bring it on? So as you go through lunch and it occurs to you, you can consider it or maybe talk about it. What?
Boredom.
Yeah, boredom is connected to all this as well. So if you're leaving, some people leave at lunchtime. I have the handouts up here front here for the reflections and practices for the next month that you can take home if you'd like. I think I'd like to ask you don't take it unless until the end of the day if you're staying till 3:30, so you don't get distracted. And so let's... we have this wonderful dog here, Yolanda. Some of you might be thinking about. Well, Yolanda Yolanda knows how to sleep really well. Let me say relaxed. But Yolanda is a service dog, and Yolanda is amazing. Offers amazing service to the world. So, part of the Sangha. And
she knows you're talking about.
One reflection is, if a dog doesn't have anything to do, it usually just goes to sleep. And what? When a dog has nothing to do, it just goes to sleep. And Suzuki Roshi, whenever he had nothing to do, he would just go to sleep. So,
does a sleeping
whatever
dog
that means.
Does a sleeping dog have Buddha nature?
I think so.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, it's an interesting. It's a very interesting question you ask, and or issue you bring up, and is there, and being and falling asleep is not being awake. It's obvious, but also awake with the big A, you know, being awake, is there a way of doing nothing where we stay alert and energized? And is there a different way of doing nothing where, what are the conditions that allow a person to fall asleep? What's absent that allows a person to sleep? And what's present that allows someone to do nothing and stay alert? You know, so if a person's doing nothing, what is absent that allows a person to fall asleep? And what is present that allows a person to stay alert? What's the difference? So, the question, what are the conditions? What are the variety of conditions that are the prompt sloth and torpor, in addition to ways of thinking? So let's take an hour for lunch, and so we'll start in here again at 1:00.